William and the Bomb. It caused quite a sensation among the outlaws when they heard that the Parfitts were coming back from London to live in the village again because of the war. Joan Parfitt was the only girl of whom the outlaws had ever really approved. She was small and dark and shy and eager, and considered the outlaws the embodiments of every manly virtue. They were afraid that her sojourn in London might have spoilt her, but to their relief they found that she'd not altered at all. She was still small and dark and shy and eager, and she still considered the outlaws the embodiments of every manly virtue. It turned out that Joan would celebrate her birthday while she was staying at Lilac Cottage. "And Mummy says I can have a birthday party," she told them. "It'll be lovely to be able to have you all to my party." Further investigation revealed that Joan's birthday was on the same day as Hubert Lane's. And then the outlaws became really excited, for Hubert Lane, the inveterate enemy of the outlaws, was having a party of, as far as possible, pre-war magnificence, and he was inviting to it all his own supporters. He had indeed arranged the party chiefly in order to exclude from it the outlaws and their friends, and to jeer at them as the boys who were not going to a birthday party. He was aghast when he heard about Jones. He continued to jeer, but a note of anxiety crept into his jeering.
"We're going to get Mr. Lester to come and bring his kinematograph," said Hubert.
"He won't," said William. "He's an air raid warden, and he says he's not got time. We've tried him."
"Ha," said Hubert. "I bet he'll bring it to ours."
But he was wrong. Mr. Lester most emphatically refused to bring his kinematograph to the party. In pre-war days, the crowning glory of every children's party for miles around had been Mr. Lester's kinematograph and his collection of Mickey Mouse films. Since the war began, however, Mr. Lester had become a district warden. He had no time for such childish things as kinematographs, and had in fact locked it up in the big cupboard in his dressing room, announcing that it would not reappear till after the war, not until victory should have crowned the warden's efforts. Both the outlaws and the Hubert Laneites resigned themselves to the absence of this central attraction, but rivalry between them still ran high. Hubert was afraid that the outlaws would evolve a more exciting programme for Joan's party than he and his followers could evolve for theirs. "Wish something had happened to them," muttered Hubert darkly as he passed Lilac Cottage. And then, as if his wishes had the power of a magician's wand, something did happen. The bomb fell that night. It was, literally, a bomb. For the first time since the outbreak of war, a German bomber passing over the village chose, for no conceivable reason, to release part of its load there. Fortunately, most of it fell in open country, and there were no casualties. But one bomb fell in the roadway just outside the hall, blew up the entrance gates, and made a deep crater in the road. Mr. Lester, complete with overalls and tin hat, was on the spot immediately. It was he who observed at the bottom of the crater the smooth, rounded surface of a half-buried, unexploded bomb. All through the months of inactivity, he had longed for an occasion to which he could rise, and he rose to this one superbly. The road must be roped off, traffic must be diverted, all houses in the immediate neighbourhood must be evacuated. Lilac Cottage was among those houses, and at first Mrs. Parfitt did not know where to go. Then Miss Milton came to the rescue. Miss Milton was prim and elderly and very, very house-proud. She had a spare bedroom to offer Mrs. Parfitt and Joan. Mrs. Parfitt hesitated. "It's very kind of you," she said. "I hope, of course, that it won't be for long. Poor Joan, we were going to have her birthday party at the end of the month." Miss Milton paled. "A party? She must not, of course, expect anything of that sort in my house. I have a horror of children." Mrs. Parfitt sighed. "Yes, well, thank you so much. I hope we shan't trouble you for long." But days passed, and still the bomb failed to explode. The spirits of the Hubert Laneites rose.
"Yah," they jeered, "who's not going to have a birthday party?"
It seemed indeed very unlikely that Joan's party would take place now. On the afternoon before the date of what was to have been her birthday party, Joan finally gave up hope. William found her sobbing at the bottom of Miss Milton's garden. "Oh, William," she fixed brimming eyes on him beseechingly, "can't you do something about it?" The appeal went to William's head. He could not meet those tear-filled eyes and admit that he was powerless to help.
"You leave it to me," he said. I'll fix it.
The tear-filled eyes widened.
Oh, William, can you?
He gave a short laugh. Can I? Can I? There's not many things I can't do.
Oh, William, but tomorrow, it's so near.
Tomorrow's nothing to me. Tomorrow isn't.
Her small, expressive face shone once more with hope and admiration.
Oh, William.
Of course I'll fix it up by tomorrow, he said. You'll have your party all right. And...
He lost his head still further.
And Mr. Lester'll bring his cinema thing, and it'll be all right. Oh, yes. You just leave it all to me.
And we can go home tomorrow, said Joan.
Of course you can, said William.
Joan drew a deep sigh, smiling blissfully through her tears.
Oh, William, you are wonderful. Thank you.
Quite all right, said William airily. Well, I'd better be getting off to see about it.
He swaggered out of the garden gate and set off down the road. As soon as he reached the bend that hid him from Joan's sight, his swagger dropped from him. He stood still in the middle of the road, staring in front of him. And then the grim expression of his face gave place to one of rapture. Quite suddenly, he had thought of a way.
It was so simple that he couldn't imagine why he hadn't thought of it before. All he had to do was to move the unexploded bomb from the front of Joan's house to the front of Hubert Lane's house. Then Joan would be able to have her party, and Hubert Lane would not be able to have his.
There was an element of poetic justice in the idea that appealed to him strongly. Even the details of the plan didn't seem difficult. He must, of course, wait till no one was about. The bomb was not as closely guarded as it had been at the beginning.
Occasionally, Mr. Lester still came to gaze at it tenderly over the barrier, his eyes gleaming with the pride of possession. His bomb, his beloved, unexploded bomb. It justified, he felt, his whole career as a warden, gave his life meaning and purpose and inspiration. William realized, of course, that the thing might go off as he was removing it to Hubert Lane's house, but he considered himself quite capable of dealing with that. A saucepan on his head, a tin tray in readiness to use as a shield, and then he thought the bomb might do its worst. He would wait till the coast was clear, make his way down the crater, lift the bomb into his wooden soapbox on wheels, and trundle it down the road to the Lane's house. Mr. Lester would soon find it, evacuate the Lanes, bring Joan and her mother back from Miss Milton's, and Hubert would not be able to have his party, and Joan would be able to have hers. He waited till dusk, put saucepan, tray and spade into his wooden cart, and wheeled it off down the road to the barrier, outside what had been the hall gates. The road was empty. He glanced around, put the saucepan on his head, slipped under the barrier, and climbed down into the crater. He dug carefully all round the unexploded bomb. It was bigger than he'd thought it would be. It was different altogether from what he'd thought it would be. He scraped the earth off the top and began to loosen the earth around it. So intent was he on his task that he was unaware of Mr. Lester's approach, till he heard a shout and turned to see Mr. Lester hanging over the barrier, his face crimson with rage, his eyes bulging. "Come back!" he shouted. "Come back! You!" Words failed him. William straightened himself and looked from the bomb to Mr. Lester, from Mr. Lester to the bomb. "Come back!" said Mr. Lester again. William wiped his hands down his trousers. "I'm all right," he said carelessly. "I'll fetch my tray thing if it starts exploding. But I say, it's a jolly funny bomb. Come down and have a look at it." Mr. Lester's eyes, bloodshot with emotion, went from William to the bomb and remained fixed on it. William had cleared all the earth and debris away from it, and it lay there, large, round, of a greyish hue. Suddenly, William gave a shout. "Gosh! I know what it is!" he said.
In the same moment, Mr. Lester knew what it was, too. It was the stone ball from the top of one of the brick piers that had formed the entrance gates of the hall. Pale now, but with his eyes still bulging, Mr. Lester dived under the barrier and came down to join William in the crater. He stared at the bomb, stroked it, prodded it. His face was a mask of incredulous horror.
"It is, isn't it?" said William.
Slowly,
Mr. Lester turned to him. He looked shaken, but master of himself.
"No need to go about talking of this, my boy," he said. "No need to mention it at all. It would, in fact, be very wrong to go about upsetting people's morale. There are very severe penalties for spreading rumours. I hope you will remember that."
William looked at him. He knew all about the process of face-saving.
"Then Joan and her mother can go home tomorrow," he said.
"Certainly," said Mr. Lester, graciously. His eyes kept returning, as if drawn against his will, to the round, smooth object at his feet.
"And you'll come and give your cinema show at her party, won't you?" said William, with elaborate carelessness.
Mr. Lester fixed a stern eye on him.
"You know quite well that I'm not giving any such entertainments during the war," he said.
William gazed dreamily into the distance.
"I thought that if we had the cinema at the party, it'd be easier for me not to spread rumours."
Mr. Lester gulped and swallowed. He looked long and hard at William.
William continued to gaze dreamily into the distance. There was silence.
Then Mr. Lester yielded to the inevitable.
Well, my boy,"
he said, with a fairly good imitation of his pre-war geniality.
I like to see young people enjoying themselves. I'll make an exception to my rule for this one occasion, just this once, and I will take it for granted that you will not spread rumours."
"Oh, no," promised William.
"I won't spread rumours."
William had barely reached Miss Milton's house next morning when Mr. Lester appeared, complete with all his district warden's regalia.
"I have come to inform you, Mrs. Parfitt," he said portentously, "that the bomb has been disposed of, and that you are at liberty to return to your home at your convenience."
He avoided William's eye as he spoke.
"Oh, how lovely," said Joan. "Just in time for the party. It is in time for the party, isn't it, Mummy?"
"Yes, dear," said Mrs. Parfitt joyfully. "We can manage a grand party in a day."
"Ah, yes, the party," said Mr. Lester with a somewhat mirthless smile. "This young man said that you wanted me to bring my kinematograph to it."
"Oh, please, Mr. Lester,"
said Joan, clasping her hands and looking up at him beseechingly.
"Oh, please."
Mr. Lester gave a good imitation of a strong man melted by a child's pleading.
"Well, perhaps just this once. Mind, I'll never do it for you again, and I'll never do it for anyone else at all, till after the war."
"That is kind of you, Mr. Lester," said Mrs. Parfitt. Joan was dancing about with joy. "Oh, won't it be lovely? Oh, thank you, Mr. Lester."
"Isn't it kind of him, William?" said Mrs. Parfitt.
"Yes," agreed William. "Jolly kind."
"The bomb didn't explode then," said Mrs. Parfitt. "I suppose we'd have heard it if it had done."
"Oh, no," said Mr. Lester, repeating the mirthless smile. It didn't explode. It was disposed of. The process needs specialised knowledge, and the details, I'm afraid, are too technical for you to understand."
Mrs. Parfitt looked at him, deeply impressed.
"How fortunate we are to have you for our warden," she said.
Joan and William walked jauntily down the road past the Lanes' house. At once the Hubert Laneites popped their heads over the hedge.
"Yah," they jeered, "who's not having a party?"
"Well, who isn't?" said William innocently. "Joan is, and we're all going to it, and we're going to have a jolly good time."
Hubert's mouth dropped open.
"What? But what about the bomb?"
"Oh, that," said William airily. "Goodness, fancy you not having heard about that. It's been disposed of. Joan and her mother's going back home at once."
Hubert's mouth remained open while he slowly digested the news.
"Well, anyway," he said, "I bet yours won't be such a nice party as ours. I jolly well bet it won't."
"Don't you think so?" said William.
He stopped to savour his piece of news before he brought it out.
"Mr. Lester's come into ours and bring in his cinema thing and his films."
Hubert's eyes goggled. His face paled.
No, not Mr. Lester, he said, as if pleading for mercy. No, not his Mickey Mouse films.
Of course, said William cheerfully. But he's not going to do it for anyone else. Only for Joan. Come on, Joan. They walked on, leaving a crestfallen silence behind them. Even the Hubert Lanites, past masters in the art of jeering, could think of no answering taunt. Joan turned to William as they walked on down the road. William, she said, you had something to do with it, hadn't you?
With what? Said William innocently.
Well, the bomb, and us going home, and the party, and the Mickey Mouse films, and everything.
Well, just a bit, he admitted.
Oh, William, do tell me.
William turned to her.
I'll tell you, he promised. After the war...